Alright, let's begin. Parshas Vayeshev. So I wanted today to actually start from the beginning of the parasha. Very often we do not do that. I was looking back through the annals of our previous classes and we have not discussed the beginning of the parasha yet. So the beginning here, the first three verses or four verses are really pretty critical in describing what it is between Yosef and his brothers that was the cause of the entire episode, which would eventually lead for him to be sold down to Mitzrayim. And we of course know of the significance in terms of Jewish history of this seminal event. The Torah describes the problem. The Torah describes why the brothers were on page 200, 198 and 200. Why the brothers disliked him, but it says it in a very cryptic way and in a very brief way. So let's actually study the few verses which describe the relationship between Yosef and his brothers and that which will lead to the rest of the parasha, which is, of course, that story of his sale down to Mitzrayim. Excuse me. So let us begin from the beginning. At the end of last week's parsha, in Vayishlach, so following Yaakov and Esav, where they have their meeting, as Yaakov is on his way back to Eretz Yisrael, he meets up with Esav, and they have that whole discussion which we discussed last week. At the end of the parsha, the Torah concludes with the lineage of Esav. You have that whole little chart there that you can see on page 197. The Torah spends two full pages in our Chumash. It's actually three full pages describing, beginning on page 192, beginning of the 36th chapter, Ve'ela told us Esav. These are the generations of Esav. And for three pages, the Torah goes through all of his genealogy, all of his children and his children's children, and who were the kingdoms, and who ruled whom, and who were the tribes, and who were the leaders. And it spends a significant amount of time with that. And we're going to parallel that in the beginning of our parsha with Ela told us Yaakov. So whereas we said these are the generations of Esav, we are going to open up with Ela told us Yaakov. These are the generations of Yaakov. We're going to see, and Rashi is going to be bothered right away by some obvious differences between the way the Torah describes the list of the genealogy of the told us the generation of Esav, and that with Yaakov. But that's the context of where we're coming from, immediately concluding the discussion of Esav and his generations into Yaakov. So the Torah opens, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz migurei aviv be'eretz Canaan. Yaakov settled in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. So Yaakov, not like Esav, who settled in the Mount Seir in the place called Edom, on the other side of the Jordan River. Yaakov actually travels now into Eretz Yisrael and settles in the place of his father's dwelling, in the land of Canaan, and then we're going to go through the next phrase of Ela told us Yaakov. So Rashi's first comment is, why is this being told here? Why are we opening up now with this story of where Yaakov was and his story of his generations? So Rashi makes two comments. He says, number one, Achar shekosav lach yishuvam, the very first Rashi of the page, after the Torah just told us all of the dwellings of Esav and all of his generations, biderech kitzara. The Torah told us Esav's genealogy, but in a very brief way. You read through the verses in the last chapter, in chapter 36, it simply says, this one gave birth to that one gave birth to this one ruled over here, that one ruled over there. And it gives in very brief format all of the genealogy and the generations of Esav. Following that, says the Torah, says Rashi, Esav, who was lohayu svunim v'chashuvim lefaresh heich nisyashvu, the Torah does not value or think it important to tell you Esav's history, how he came to live over here, whom he conquered when he took over this land, how did they dwell this place, irrelevant. The Torah just tells you this is who they were, this is where they were. So after we completed all of that, Piresh Loch Yeshuva Yaakov v'toldoisav b'derech arucha. Now the Torah turns to Yaakov and tells us his story, his genealogy, but not in a brief format of this one gave birth to that one and that one gave birth to this one, but in a very long, drawn-out story. Because they are very valued and treasured before Hashem to spend time on them. And the Rashi then gives a mashal. Lemargolios shenafla bein hachoil. If you have a pearl, and it falls into a large pile of sand, Rashi says. And now what you need to do is you need to sift through all of the sand in order to find your pearl. So Rashi says, Mimashmesh Adam Bechoil Vikoivro Bekivra, a person sifts through all of the soul, sifting it with a sieve, Ad Shemoyse es Hamargolis, till he finds his pearl. And when he finds his pearl, Mashlechas Hatzuros Miyodo, then he throws away all the other stuff in his hands, he throws away the other dirt and debris that he's gathered, and he's only looking for his pearl. So too, says Rashi in the Mashal, here you have him looking for the generations of his pearl of Yaakov, so he goes through all the genealogy of Esau, just looking and sifting until he finds, oh, here is my son Yaakov and his genealogy, this is the one that I want, I get rid of all the rest. And as the Maharal points out, we're never going to hear from Esau again, that's the end. That's the end of his line, he's played his role, we're finished with him as far as Jewish history is concerned. He's gone to his land, and we move on, throwing away the extraneous parts of the sieve that I don't need. We're finished with Esau. We move on to Yaakov's story. The Medrash uses a very similar parallel, by the way, when it comes to the story of Rus, Shavuot's time, in which Hashem is looking for the pearl in the form of Rus amongst the nations of the world, looking for that one pearl who's going to mother the Davidic dynasty and the mother of Mashiach. They use that same mashal, that same way of thinking of a pearl lost in the sand where you have to sift through everything until you finally find that which you're looking for. In any case, Rashi has one more comment why this is here. Rashi brings another mashal. He brings a mashal to a person bearing flax. And the person who's got so much flax walks into a town, Rashi says, that's also, he walks into a place full of flax, and the blacksmith is in awe, or amazed, where's he going to put all of this flax? Like, you come into my place, you come into my store, you got all this stuff here, what am I going to do with all this stuff? And someone, a bright person, says to the blacksmith and says, don't you worry about that flax. It looks like they're going to overrun your store. It looks like they're going to take up all your room and you're not going to have any room to sell your goods. You don't have to worry. You're a blacksmith. What's going to happen is a single spark is going to come out from your work and it's going to catch the flax and all the flax will go up in smoke. So don't you worry, says this pikeach, says this bright person, this one sharp one. He says to the owner of the blacksmith, don't worry about that flax. It looks like they're taking over your store. They'll be gone in a minute. Says the Medrash, so too Yaakov ra'a kol ha'alufim haksuvim lamala. Yaakov saw all these chiefs and all these kings and all these princes that were listed for the previous three pages that came out of Esav. And Yaakov says, what's going to be my brother Esav? He's got all these generations, he's got all these leaders, all these powerful nations and kings. What's going to be?
Oh, when did he see this written?
He saw the people, the nature of the people. Not that he didn't see the three pages written. Tama va'amar miyachol lichboishes kulon. How am I going to be able to conquer all of these people? Maksiv lamata. That's what it says. Eila told us Yaakov. These are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. And we're going to get to that in a minute. That's the very next verse. Yosef was of the generations of Yaakov. And the pasuk says, "V'ha'ya beis Yaakov eishu beis Yosef lehava." The house of Yaakov will be like a fire, and the house of Yosef like a spark. Ubeis Esav lekash, and the house of Esav will be like straw. One spark from Yosef will destroy the entire house of Esav. So Rashi comments, another reason why this is taught here is in response to all of the chiefs and the officers and the kings of Esav that we just listed, and Yaakov's fear of like, how am I going to handle all this? So he says, your son Yosef is going to be like the spark in the flame, and they are only like straw, the house of Esav. They might seem like many, but one little spark from you will be able to destroy all of them. Okay. One more comment on this verse. The pasuk says, where did Yaakov dwell? Where did Yaakov dwell?
In Canaan, where his fathers had sojourned.
So the Ramban is bothered by that. Seems to be extraneous. Why did you tell me both phrases? Why did you tell me not only that he lived in the land of Canaan, but that this was the place where his father dwelt? Just tell me that's where his father dwells. I know that his father lives in Canaan. Or just tell me that's where he was from. Or just tell me it's where he was. Why did it say both his land, his father's land, and the land of Canaan? So the Ramban comments here that this was to tell you also in contrast to where Esav was. We just got finished talking about Esav. And where did Esav settle? In Seir, which was his place of inheritance. That was the place that Hashem had promised Esav, where he would dwell and his offspring would dwell and he would become a great mighty nation. Where does Yaakov go? He goes to Canaan. Now, Canaan was a place that was promised to him, but was it his yet? It wasn't. We don't find Yaakov conquering Canaan here like we do the sons of Esau conquering the land of Edom and Seir, where they take it over and they rule it like it's theirs. So the Ramban says this is to tell that Esau took over his land as an achuza. He took it over as, this is the inheritance, this is the blessing that I've received, I'm going to take it, conquer it, and rule it as mine. Aval Yaakov Yoshev Ger Ke'oviv. Yaakov dwelled like a foreigner, like his father, in the land of the sojournings of his father. His father didn't rule the land of Eretz Canaan. He was a visitor, he was a guest. Yaakov also lived in the land of Canaan, but not as if it was his own, only as a guest, as a foreigner, as a stranger in the land. Be'eretz lo lohem, not their land, Canaan. V'hakavana, why did Yaakov and Yitzchak both choose to dwell as a foreigner in the land of Canaan? Ki heim boichrim lagur be'eretz hanivcheres. They chose to live in the chosen land. They knew that this would be the land that would be given to them. It would have that special status, and they chose to live there now, even though it wasn't yet theirs. That's where they wanted to be. This is the land, this is our home, this is the place that will be given to us and our children. We are going there now, but it's not yours yet, but we want to be here anyway. And, says the Ramban, and not only do we want to be in the chosen land, the Eretz HaNivcheres, v'shenizkayim bohem ki ger yihyeh zarecho be'eretz lo lohem. The pasuk had been said to Abraham, your children will be foreigners in a land that's not theirs for 400 years. Yitzhak and Yaakov wanted to start that. They wanted to take that burden already upon themselves, that by choosing to live in a land that wasn't there, they themselves would already be a fulfillment of that pasuk of, we are dwelling in a land that's not ours. The lo be'esav, to make a distinction to say the Abrahamic promise is being fulfilled from us and not through Esav. Because look, Esav is in his homeland. He's in the land that's his. He's not fulfilling the verse of your children will be foreigners in a foreign land for 400 years. He's in his own place. We're specifically choosing a land that's not ours to show that the prophecy should be fulfilled for us, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and our line, and not the line that goes off through Esav, who is dwelling in his own land. So that therefore we should see that the promise should be fulfilled only through us, and that we should have chosen to live in the land that was chosen for us, the land of Eretz Yisrael.
Question.
Yeah.
What choice did they actually have? Where else would they have lived?
They could have lived anywhere. They could have lived in where Haran, where Lavan was, where they were from. That was their birthplace. Could have lived in Esau's land. Had those options.
How is that not fulfilling? How's living in Canaan not living in stolen Galut when you were saying it's...
Because it wasn't given to them yet. In the same way, Hanukkah's coming. So say a little Hanukkah for it. One of their four exiles the Jewish people are going to suffer through. We're in the fourth and final exile now, the Galus of Edom. I think it was the third, if I have my numbers right, was the Galus of Yavon, the Greek exile, during which time the Hanukkah story took place. Where did the Hanukkah story take place?
Houdini.
I mean, in the country. Which country?
Yerushalayim.
In Israel. And it's referred to one of the four exiles that the Jewish people are going to suffer. The exile of Bavel, where we actually are exiled to Babylonia. The exile of Madai during the Purim story. The exile of Edom, which is in Rome and elsewhere in the world. And the exile of Greece. But we weren't in Greece, we were in Israel. Just that we weren't under control of the land. The Beis HaMikdash was taken from us. It was defiled, and that's considered exile, because exile in the Jewish sense is not just from a homeland, but it's a spiritual sense. And you can be in exile in the land of Israel.
Would you say it's the current situation?
Exactly. I was about to say, exactly. The Jews living in Israel today are in exile. We are home in exile, as opposed to us who are away from home in an exile, and it's much better to be home in exile than away from home in exile, but even the Jews who are home are in exile.
So who would you say is really controlling you? Israel.
So this is the major political debate that's going on today, in the sense that we have a Jewish government. This has never before happened in 2,000 years, in which we have a Jewish government that's not being run according to Torah. That's like, what is this? Like, how do we deal with this? Like, there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no Sanhedrin. We have a Jewish-run state in the land of Israel, but it's not run according to Jewish laws, but according to a combination of British and Turkish and Israeli law that they're making up as they go along. So, like, it's like a new, we've never had this before. Like, what is that? So that's why we have that. That's why there's so much political upheaval in the Jewish world about how to relate to this Jewish state, because we don't really have many sources for how to relate to that. So it's a step along the way. You know, it's better than it was 60 years ago. So we're moving in the right direction, and we'll, you know, we're on our way back. On our way back. What are they, 5 million Jews in Israel right now? Out of the 14 in the world? Another 20 years. Another 20 or so years, there'll be a majority of Jews living in Israel.
Six million in Israel.
Six there, and we're 14 worldwide. So, you know, I would say within 20 years, even without some massive event that'll bring us all there, there'll probably be a majority of Jews living in Israel. And that will change everything. There are many halachas that will go into effect. Once there's a majority of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, many laws which we don't observe now will become applicable again. That there are many of the laws that are related to Israel go into effect when the majority of Jews live there.
Like what's one?
Things along the lines of challah and shmita and shuma, there are many halachas which are tali ba'aretz, but it's not only the land of Israel, but it's the land of Israel when the Jews live there.
It has to be observed Jews living.
I don't know. The language is Rov Yisrael Be'artzam. Most of the Jews are in their land. I don't know. We'll see when we get there. When we get there soon. Mirtz Hashem. In our lifetimes, we will see the majority of Jews living back in Eretz Yisrael. Let's move on. Okay, next pasuk. This is a big one. So we're looking for a pasuk base, a description of what's the problem of Yosef with his brothers that's going to lead up this entire episode, and it is basically entirely encompassed in this one pasuk. It is a long, complicated pasuk, but let's break it down, and we should be able to come up with at least five questions that we're going to need to break this pasuk down into its component parts to understand what's being said. Eile told us Yaakov. These are the generations of Yaakov. Yosef, ben Shiva Esrei Shana, Yosef was 17 years old, Hayaroya Es Echov Batzon, and he was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock, Vuhu Na'ar Es Bnei Vilha Ves Bnei Zilpa Nisheyoviv, he was a youth with the sons of Bilha and the sons of Zilpa, Vayove Yosef Es Dibasam Ra El Avihem, his father's wives, and Yosef would bring evil reports about them to their father. Okay, that was choppy and complicated, but I wanted you all just let's read through that. So that's what we have. Take a second, read through the pasuk, and what are some of the issues that we're going to need to, let's put them out on the table first. What are some questions in this pasuk?
What was the concubines and his wives?
Say that again?
What was the concubines only? The children of the concubines.
What about them?
Zilpah. Has it mentioned them as wife before? Or only calls them concubines?
Oh, yeah, okay. That's the Ramban comments. That's a valid point. In other words, here they're called wives. Sometimes they're called shivchah. The Ramban says whenever they're related to Leah and Rachel, they're referred to as a shivchah. When it's just themselves, they're referred to as full wives, which they were. Okay, what are some problems in this pasuk?
Because it says it's going to be it's
going to
be available for generations of Yaakov, and it just starts with Yosef.
Okay, number one, excellent, right? Eila told us Yaakov. These are the generations of Yaakov. When we said that by Noach, Eila told us Noach. What did we say? Eshayim Escham Yosef. We told him his children. Right there we have the same question, because Eila told us Noach, Noach Ish Tzadik, and then he had three sons. We did the same. Like, why'd you break the story up? We just got finished saying, we flipped back three pages. When we discussed the beginning of chapter 36 on page 192, we started with Eila told us Esav. These are the generations of Esav, and we gave a whole long list. These are his wife. These are his children. And here we say Eila told us Yaakov, Yosef. If one were reading this pasuk, it would seem like who are the generations of Yaakov? So it's Yosef. Okay, we know that that's not true. In fact, the pasuk itself refers to other children. So we'll have to deal with why did it say it that way. Good. That's one fair question. What else do we have? How old is Yosef at this time?
17.
Would you describe, at what age would you describe somebody as a na'ar? Na'ar is a youth or a lad. How old would you be, just throwing a number out, where you would continue to describe somebody as a na'ar?
Seven.
Seven?
Six.
Right?
32.
Depends if we want to define it by how old we as children have to be supported by our children, our parents, or we could say 32, 34, we could keep bumping that number up, but most parents would probably define it a little bit lower. Right, 7, 8, 10, 13, would you define a 17-year-old as a na'ar?
Well, what age do they define the Yitzhak as a na'ar as?
Have you ever defined as a na'ar?
Yeah, when they went to the camp. Na'ar.
I know, Vayikach es na'arov ito. That wasn't Yitzchak, but right, he was older. He was referring to his other son, but you're right, that's a fair point. The Pashup Pshat, the Chazal say that was Eliezer, or it was Yishmael, he was a little bit older also. So Rashi here is going to be about all the Mefarshim. Yosef is already 17 years old. Why are we still calling him a Na'ar? He was a youth. So it's an odd term to define Yosef with. Yeah, what else? Are you giving an answer? Possibly. Let's have more questions. Let's read this pasuk. These are the chronicles of Yosef, a 7 years old shepherd with his father the flock. Does that make sense? That phrase okay? It's just phrase by phrase. These are the chronicles of Joseph. Now, we were rather bothered by that. Why do we start with Yosef as far as describing the chronicles or generations of Yosef? Fine. He was 17. He was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock. Is there a problem with that phrase?
Nothing.
Right? That seems okay. He was a shepherd. They're telling us what he did. But he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. Does that phrase make sense?
Well, somehow in the pecking order, if they were sat at the table in order, he would be further down with the sons of...
Does the English make sense? He was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah.
Same age?
What does it mean to be a youth with someone?
He hung out with them. They were his babysitters.
Okay, that was a fine suggestion. In other words, let's point out the problems. We have a description of Yosef being a Na'ar. Es b'nei Vilhov, es b'nei Zilpah. He was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. What does the Torah mean to tell us about the relationship of the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, the two maidservants, whose sons numbered... There were a total of six of them.
Behavior.
Or four of them, I should say, right? Six and two. There were six of them.
I think they were friends. She was friends with them.
Okay.
Maybe to his other brothers.
Okay, so we have some concept of he was a youth with them, friends, babysitter, a couple different ideas.
As opposed to his own other brothers.
Okay, so we're clearly already seeing a distinction between the way that he related to the sons of the two maidservants of Bilhah and Zilpah, as opposed to the way that he related to the sons of his other brothers from the sons of Leah. Now, and Joseph would bring evil reports about them to their father. What two questions would you ask about that? Should be two obvious questions here.
Well, it implies, or at least I infer, that he brought evil reports about the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. I always thought it was...
Excellent. So Dina's pointing out the question I was looking for. Who is the word them referring to? And Joseph would bring evil reports about them to their father. How many different subjects have been mentioned already in this pasuk that this could be referring back to? What does it say? These are the chronicles of Jacob. Joseph, at the age of 17 years, was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock. Who are those brothers referring to?
That could be all of them.
That could be all the brothers, right? Then it says, but he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, and Joseph would bring evil reports about them to their father. Who is Yosef talking about when he comes back and says things to their father?
Hmm. Yeah, it could be either all of them or just Zilpah. The other brothers have wanted to get rid of him, so we have to think.
Okay, now you're right, and we know the other brothers want. So who's he talking about? So in just reading the pasuk, so you thought the pasuk referred back to only the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, right? That's what the simple reading is. And Dina says to herself, but that can't be, because I've learned since second grade that the ones who he was talking about were the other sons. That doesn't say that. It just says he brought evil reports about them. The more previous subject was the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. That's how the simple reading would go. Guess who's going to argue about this? And?
Rabban.
You got it. So we're going to have to read Rashi and the Rabban's way. How did they understand what this pasuk was saying? Now, what's the other obvious question on that last phrase?
Kind of sounds like Lashon Hara in a certain way, like this. Who's the man, the main man after Yaakov, and he's bringing evil reports about people.
Okay, let's start. Well, that'll be part of the question. But it seems like Lashon Hara. Like, what was he doing?
I want to ask him.
Okay, what else? What about this last phrase? What would we want to know? We'd want to know. what was he saying? Like what were the evil reports? He's being evil. What were they doing? And were they really wrong? And if they really were doing something wrong, shouldn't he have told their father? I mean, what was... He brought evil reports back. What were they doing, and what was he doing telling him? And more importantly was, why did he do that? No, that's really all the same question. What were they doing, and why was he telling their father about them? Who was he talking about? Why was he telling it, and what was he saying about them? Those would be the basic questions that we have. But let's just sum what we have in this pasuk. What we have here in this pasuk is a bunch of issues. Number one, we define that the pasuk is telling us the generations or the chronicles of Yaakov, and it starts off with Yosef. As opposed to his other 11 sons, these are the toldos of Yaakov. Let's talk about Yosef. Why do we start there? Then we tell us Yosef was 17 years old, and he was a shepherd, but he was a youth with the sons of Bnei Bilhah and the sons of Bnei Zilpah. What does that mean to tell us that he was a youth still, and he was doing it specifically with these two sons, with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah? What's with the other brothers? And then the Torah tells us that he used to bring evil reports about them to their father, and we're not sure yet who he was talking about, what he said about them, and why he felt it his responsibility to say anything. But this pasuk will encompass the source of all the problems Yosef is going to have is buried within this pasuk. So far, so good? Clear as mud?
Can I just ask a question about, he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. In the grammar, could it be that he had been a son with, in other words, he was a young, when he was young, he had been.
Maybe. I'm not enough of a grammarian to know.
Would make a difference.
Okay, it seems it's not translated that way,
yeah.
But maybe. Okay, let me just read one more pasuk just to round it out, then we'll go back to this the second pasuk. V'Yisrael ohaves Yosef mikol bonos. After this whole long description in pasuk Beis of all the stuff that's going on, Yosef being 17 and being a shepherd and bringing evil reports, being a youth, lots of pieces of information, and at the end of all that, in which if you only had that one pasuk, would you have described Yosef in a positive light or in a negative light? If all that you knew about Yosef was pasuk Beis, the second verse in this parasha, this is really all that we know about him. So far, this is our introduction to the person of Yosef. We were told about his birth, and now this is the first thing we're told about him. He's 17 years later. He's described as a youth with the sons of the maidservants and bringing evil reports back to his father about his brothers. That's all we know about him. Good guy, not so good guy. What do we think of him? I don't know, but I mean, it's not painted in the most positive light. That I will say. What's the very next phrase the Torah says? And Yaakov loved Yosef from all of his brothers. Have we been given any information that would explain that? Have we been told? In other words, at least we had by Esav, where we also have a father taking sides, and Yitzchak loving Esav more than Yaakov, the Torah says, Kitzayid Bifid, because he put game in his mouth. He hunted for him in the simple meaning, or as Rashi quotes from Chazal, he fooled him. But the Torah says, Kitzayid Bifid. He loved Esav because he was either a hunter for him or he fooled him. And here we have a description of Yosef. Doesn't seem to start off very positive. And the Torah then says, and Yisrael, Yaakov, loved Yosef from all of his sons. And the Torah now gives us a reason. Ki ben zekunim hulo, because he was a child of his old age. And therefore he made him a fine woolen tunic. Vayas va'osalo kisoines pasim. That's what we're told, and then the Torah is going to go on to say how the brothers did not appreciate the fact that his father loved them, and they hated him, and then the whole story is going to go, and now he's going to have dreams, it's going to get even worse. But this is what we're told so far.
Now, Binyamin was a child of an even younger age.
Binyamin's an even younger age. Now, that's going to be a question. Now, when we ask the question of, okay, so now I need to understand, why does Yaakov love Yosef more than his other sons? So what does the Torah tell us? Because he was a child of his
old age.
He has a younger brother. Who's the younger brother? Binyamin. Binyamin was born even after Yosef.
Yeah, but Binyamin was born and his beloved wife died in childbirth. So maybe that gives Binyamin a tinge of pain.
Okay, so if we take the phrase, because he was a child of old age, literally, we'll have to deal with this question of All right, there was a younger child, and then maybe you could have a nice answer for that. The other question we'd have to deal with for one second is that Ramban asks the question, also, the next youngest brother, or next older brother, going up is only a year or two older than Binyamin. It wasn't like Binyamin was, you know, 10 years younger, Yosef was 10 years younger than the next brother. A couple of years separated them. So we have to understand why Yaakov loved Yosef so much, especially in the face of the description we're given of him in the previous pasuk, which doesn't seem to lend itself to that. It's a youth, bringing evil reports, hanging out with the maidservant sons. Like, what's going on in that pasuk? And why does Yaakov love him so much?
It's his character. People always love him. He goes to Egypt and they love him.
Okay, so that's a good reason. It's just that that's not the reason given. In other words, we're told things about Yosef which wouldn't seem to imply this. Mm-hmm. And the Torah says, and he loved him because he was a son of his old age. And it doesn't say because matzah chein be'enei, you know, everyone who we met. Which is true what you're saying. You will find that. But that wasn't exactly what was stated. Yeah?
One thing you haven't mentioned that I think is probably very significant, it says, now Yisrael loved Yosef more, not Yaakov.
Okay, excellent. In other words, the name. Yisrael. Beautiful. All right. We find two names for Yaakov. We have the name Yaakov and the name Yisrael, which was named at the end of last week's parsha. And the name Yisrael is generally used for the more spiritual or klal Yisrael, like the long-term aspect of that, more than just Yaakov, when we're just referring to the person of Yaakov. So the Torah here specifically uses the name Yisrael when it describes his love, which is an excellent point, especially when you note in the beginning of Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Beis, we specifically use which name?
Yaakov.
Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz mugurei aviv. These are the dwellings that Yaakov dwelled. Eile toldos Yaakov. So we use his name Yaakov twice in the first two psukim, and then when we describe his love of Yosef, we suddenly switch to the name Yisrael. That's an excellent point.
Could it be that that's just a sort of a cover that sometimes the Chumash does? It could say he loved him because he was Rachel's son, but that would cast aspersions on Leah. But I mean, he doesn't have to love the child because he was a child of his old age. He loved him because he was Rachel's son.
You're saying like Paul's saying, you're giving me an excellent reason, just not the reason the Torah gives. So
things like, just covering.
Who's the Torah covering for? It's covering for... The Torah is really telling this to me.
Yeah.
You're saying that he, like, as if he told that to everybody else.
Yeah, he's saying, the Torah is saying it's because he was son of his old age. Because if it said, because he was a son of Rachel, then that would say something about what he felt about Leah.
Okay, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe indicating the level and degree of devotion and loyalty to the father.
Excellent. We'll see something like that. We'll see. Ramban's going to do something
like
that.
Do we also know that he looked like his
father? Yes, you got that from we'll see that also now. Okay, let's see how Rashi and Ramban deal with this. We're going to deal with this very differently. And let's learn their approaches. Okay, says Rashi as follows. Ayla told us, Yaakov, four lines from the bottom, if you want to follow it inside, on the first column of Rashi, on page 198. Ayla told us, Yaakov, Ve'ela shall told us, Yaakov, these are from the generations of the Chronicles of Yaakov, Ayla yishuvehem ve'gilgulehem, and shebo'u l'chlal yishuv. Says Rashi, these are not listing just the generations of Yaakov. Even though the Torah would read it that way, you would translate Eila told us to me the generations. Really, what the Torah means to say is that these are the histories of the occurrences and the events that would eventually lead to the settling of the children of Yaakov. And what's that? That's the story of Yosef. Yosef is going to be sold down to Mitzrayim, that's going to lead to all the brothers, it's going to be a whole... So in other words, don't read it as these are the generations, and that's why Art Scroll, you'll notice, which is very good, and we've pointed this out many times, a English translation is always going to be taking sides on Hebrew. The original Lashon HaKodesh has many nuances. If you read it many different ways. If you're going to write a translation, you can only put one English word on the other side of the page. You have to choose how you're going to translate. So again, just flipping back three pages, on page 192, we had a very similar phrase, V'eile toldos Esav. How is Art Scroll, how do they translate the phrase, V'Ela told us Esav on page 193? These are the descendants of Esav. We have the exact same phrase here on page 198, V'Ela told us Yaakov. And how does Art Scroll translate it as? These are the chronicles of Jacob. Very different. Why do they switch from generations or offspring to chronicles? Because Rashi had a problem. If you're telling me the generations, and then you say, Yosef, you missed the first 10. How can you say these are the generations of Yaakov and start with Yosef? It's not true. So Rashi was bothered by the problem. Rashi adds a word in and says, I'll tell you what it means. It means that these are the story of the descendants of Yaakov, which would eventually lead to their settling in. And you know where the best place to start telling the story of Yaakov's children is? The best place to start is with Yosef, because from him, they were. This is the beginning of the story, and therefore Art Scroll says, these are the chronicles, colon. Yosef was 17 years old. I'm beginning to tell you a story. I'm not listing his generations. I'm telling you a story of what would eventually lead to Yaakov and his children settling in Mitzrayim, and eventually then obviously being taken out, bringing to Eretz Yisrael, and the rest of the story of the Chumash, which we will get to. That's how Rashi says, this is simply to explain the simple meaning of the Pasuk. The Ramban has another alternative simple meaning of the Pasuk, that it means, Ela told us Yaakov, we're about to mention all the other brothers. It just, we started with Yosef, but if you finish the Pasuk, we'll get to everybody. The sons of Bilhah, and the sons of Zilpah, and the other brothers. And in the next Pasuk it says, Vayiru Echav, in verse 4, his brothers saw. As far as the simple meaning of the Pasuk, why do we say these are the generations of Yaakov, and then we start with Yosef, we can come up with explanations. Either Rashi's explanation that it's really just the storyline, or as Rabban says, no, we're getting to them. We're about to list them. If you just read for the enough verses, you'll see we're going to list all of the generations. That is just as far as the simple meaning of how do you explain these are the generations, and then you start with the word Yosef, either it's because we're going to get to them, or because he was the beginning of the story. Says Rashi, however, there's a much deeper meaning as to why, at the end of the day, what's the simple implication here? At the end of the day, the simple implication is, who is the generation of Yaakov? Yosef. The simple meaning of the Pasuk seems to say that. So we can explain in context what it means. The sages, Chazal, understood that there was something significant being said here. Says Rashi, number one, top line on the second column, if you want to follow inside. Number one, Shekol Atzmo Shel Yaakov Lo Avod Eitzel Lavan Ela BeRachel, because the entire purpose of Yaakov working for Lavan and marrying Rachel was really for one purpose, and that was to marry Rachel, and this was Rachel's first child. So when you say, these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef, it's true in a sense, because that's really what Yaakov was after. He was after Rachel, and this was Rachel's first child. Yeah, he ended up with Leah along the way, and Leah had six children. He ended up with some maidservants along the way, and they had a bunch of children, but it was really all geared towards Yosef. That was number one. Number two is what was mentioned, V'shoyeziv ikunin shel Yosef doimelo. The face, the stately appearance of Yosef exactly paralleled that of Yaakov. There was a connection between Yaakov and Yosef in that sense. Thirdly, says Rashi, Kol Mashi Iroli Yaakov Iroli Yosef, and everything that took place to Yaakov during his lifetime was followed and shadowed by what took place to Yosef. This one was hated, and that one was hated. This one's brother tried to kill him. These brothers tried to kill him, and many other examples. Rashi quotes the sages picked up on. And one final thought, Rashi says, another medrash, because it really goes back to the very first phrase, Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Mugurei Aviv, and Yaakov settled in the land of his father. And the Chazal were bothered by the language of Vayeshev, Vayeshev, that Yaakov really just wanted to settle down. Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'shalva. Yaakov returned after 20-some-odd years at Lavan's house, on the run from his brother, and he says, finally, I'm ready to retire. I just want some peace and quiet. Leave me alone. Let me settle in peace. And things should be simple, straightforward, and easy. And Vayeshev Yaakov, Hashem looks down and says, Yaakov, you want to settle down? You want to just take it easy, kick up your feet, and relax in retirement? Therefore, the episode of Yosef suddenly came up. So in other words, the sages of Bala, why did it say, V'Ela told us Yaakov Yosef? is a response to you, Yaakov. You wanted to just sit in peace and tranquility? I'll give you your story of your son, Yosef. And the Medrash concludes, Tzadikim mevakshim leishev b'shalva. If the Tzadikim desire to dwell in peace and tranquility, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to them, Lo dayin l'tzadikim asher mesukan lehem lo'olam haba. It's not enough what you'll receive in the next world, that you'll receive all the benefits, the eternal benefits of the world to come, but you want to have easy lifestyle in this world. This is the place to work. This is the place to struggle. This is the place to grow. There's no such thing of kicking your feet back and saying, I'm done. I just want to relax, sit in my hammock on vacation, sipping pina coladas by the pool. Not in this world. This world isn't for that. This world is to toil. This world is to struggle. This world is to grow, is to push against the grain, the resistance of life. So, says the sages, the Chazal were teaching us, or Hashem really was teaching us in this episode, when Yaakov thought, I did it. I have 22 years. Did anyone work harder than Yaakov over those 22 years? Never sleeping, never giving rest to his eyes, dealing with love. I put in my toil. I've become what I've become. I fathered the nation of Klal Yisrael. Now it's time to kick back and sip pina coladas. Hashem says, nope. Not until the day you die. This world is a place of fighting the resistance of life, to push against us, to constantly be pushing forward and to grow and to move forward and to never be v'shalva, never to say, it's easy, I don't have any worries, nothing to struggle with. Right? The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, until the day that you die, do not rely on yourself or believe in yourself or think that you're finished. You always have another struggle around the corner, around the bend. And therefore, Yosef's struggles came upon Yaakov, whereas he thought he was going to, have it easy. Life teaches us otherwise, and that's what life on this world is about. It's about that constant struggle and the constant growth. There will be plenty of time to reap the benefits of all eternity of our struggles, but it's only in this place where we have the struggles. Yeah?
Is there possibly a connection there with Yosef exemplifying somewhat like a whole and complete person and that knows his purpose for being here and is able to move forward like that? And the brothers, do they indicate somewhat a more lazy way and they're envious of him because they perceive him?
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
I haven't seen that. Nothing that's right or wrong, because I haven't seen that. I need to move on because I have too much left. I need to move on. Says Rashi, continuing on, Vuhunar. Vuhunar, we describe him as a lad, as a youth. Why do we describe a 17-year-old boy as a youth? Rashi says, Hayoise Maise Naros. He acted like a lad. He acted as a youth. Misakein Bisaro, he was busy playing with his hair, Mimashmesh Be'ena, with his eyes, making sure that they were groomed appropriately, Kadeshi and Nira Yofa, that he should look good. Yosef was busy with his appearances, busy with his hair, busy with his eyes. The Torah describes it as a Maisanaros, a 17-year-old boy. What are you, playing in front of the mirror all day long? Worried about your hair and your eyes? Inappropriate. Continues Rashi. Now we're going to go through Rashi. So we have all these questions. Why do we define him as a nar? Why is he allowed with these children, these sons specifically? Why is he being the... Rashi's going to have a whole approach. Says Rashi as follows. So to start off, his being a youth was something which was not looked upon in a positive way. That was something negative. He was doing childish things with his outward appearance. Now, this is something which we're not going to talk about now, but will come up a lot as we go through the rest of the parsha. Yosef had a persona, which was that of the exterior of that beauty. The women of Mitzrayim would climb the fences, the Torah will describe, to gaze at his beauty. There was something about that, and as he was growing up, that was part of his issue, his story. Each one of the Shvatim had their thing. Yosef was a physical, beautiful person, and here he's described in a negative way, but the way that he was dealing with that was as a Maisanaros, was in a childish way, playing with his hair and his eyes, making sure that he would look good. But the concept of being a beautiful person will come up again in future weeks. Mr. Shem will have a chance to get to some of that. What does it mean that he was a lad with the children of Bilha and Zilpah? Why specifically them? Says Rashi, Rogil Eitzel B'nei Bilha. He was more accustomed to be near those children of the maidservants. Why? Lefisha Hayu Achav Mevazinosan. His brothers would push them away. His brothers would make fun of them. They would call them the children of the servants. Vehu Mekharvan. But he would befriend them. So again, we're looking in this one verse, there's going to be a hidden concept as to the whole episode of why the brothers didn't like him is going to be rooted in this. And Rashi sees, Where is that? When the Torah says he was a lad with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, it's because nobody else would. It's because the other six sons of Leah were making fun of Bnei Bilhah and Zilpah. They were mistreating them. And Yosef, who was still this childish na'ar, playing with his hair and with his eyes, he would befriend the children of the maidservants and would be with them. And then he brought their evil report to their father. Whose action was Yosef reporting back to their father? Now the way Rashi has this set up so far, Yosef has befriended the sons of the maidservants against the other six sons of Leah who were making fun of them, and he would bring their evil report back to their father. Whose report was he bringing back? Says Rashi, Kol ra'a shehayaroya be'achiv b'nei Leah hayomagid le'aviv. All of the evil actions of his brothers, the sons of Leah, he would bring back to his father. So how does Rashi read that pasuk? Who is the word them going back to? The phrase brothers. He was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock. Those brothers is a reference to the six brothers, the sons of Leah. He would hang out with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, the other five brothers. And he would bring the evil reports of the previously mentioned six brothers of Leah, he would bring them back to his father. What would he say about them? So Rashi says three things. They would eat the flesh of an animal that had been ripped off the animal when the animal was still alive. This is one of the prohibitions of the Torah. It's actually one of the seven prohibitions that even the non-Jews are required to observe. You're not allowed to rip off, say, the hind leg of an animal when the animal is still alive, and then cook up that meat. Any meat, any part of the animal which had been severed while the animal is still alive, but you are not allowed to have. Anybody know why? Why would anybody want to do that?
Fresh.
It would be just as fresh if you killed it and then ripped it off. I mean, it's a difference of 3 minutes. You know why they used to do that? So I saw this suggested, because if you don't have a refrigerator, and you have a big cow or a big animal, well, you get a lot of meat from that. What do you do with all that meat? Well, you have to sell it, eat it very quickly, or figure out a way to store it, which might not be so simple in the heat of summer. Well, what if you only took off the hind leg and left the animal alive? Well, then you'd be able to keep the animal alive, eat what you need for a day or so, and then be able to keep going until eventually you wouldn't be able to maintain the animal. Now, that's a horribly cruel thing to do to an animal, but there's a reason why. I never understood why, like, the Torah prohibits it. Like, why would anybody want to do that? Well, there's a reason to do that. If you're trying to get the most out of your flock, there's a very cruel, harsh way to do that. That would be economically beneficial for you, but it's a cruelty. It's prohibited. So Yosef reported back to his father that his brothers were doing that. Now all the commentators deal with, really, the brothers were doing these things? And they all go through great lengths to explain what was going on. Most of the explanations are going to be on the scope, but what I want to talk about here goes into very complicated and nuanced halachic aspects as to the brothers held, like, this opinion that was considered Eivor Min HaChai, or this wasn't, and Yosef held that way. Most of the commentators bring it into some type of a dispute as to whether or not it applied to before the Torah was given, after the Torah was given, and what form did it look like here, so that the brothers were not overtly violating this. It's just that in Yosef's mind, he felt that that which they were doing was in violation of that. That's a whole different scope of a discussion. I want to focus on what they were talking about. They were eating Eivor Min HaChai. Number two, says Rashi, what Yosef brought is that he said they were making fun of the younger brother, the other brothers, calling them servants, the brothers of the maidservants. And number three, chashudim al ha'arayos. They were all suspect in the area of illicit relationships, that the brothers were violating that. And again, all the commentators discuss, what does that mean? What were they talking about? Beyond the scope of what the brothers were actually doing wrong. So says Rashi, who was he talking about? The six sons of Leah. What was he saying about them? He was saying that they were violating these three things. Chazal came up with these three examples. Eivor Min HaChai, they were eating flesh from an animal that was torn before it was killed. That they were speaking it, that the other brothers were servants. And that they were suspect in the area of illicit relationships. Rashi points out in all three of these things, Yosef was punished. He was punished that A, he had to have an animal slaughtered in order to cover up the blood from when he was sold. That it was entirely slaughtered, it was killed beforehand. And the brother said, you see, we killed the animal, we killed it entirely to get its blood before selling you. He was sold as a slave for reporting on that, the fact that the brothers were calling the other brothers slaves. And he had to deal with the wife of Potiphar and all of her advances for his having said that the brothers were suspect in the area of illicit relationships.
That's neat. That's interesting because God saw the truth in this relationship.
Right.
But from Yaakov's perspective, these were his sons that he was raising. And so here are the six sons of his lesser beloved wife behaving not the way he wants his future to be. And so it answers the question that he loved Yosef very much. Yosef came out clean.
Because he kept reporting negatively about the other sons.
But not just negatively. This is the future of the Jewish people. And if they are transgressing, I mean, as a parent, you know, someone comes and tells you that your kid puts his kippah behind the, as soon as he walks away from the house.
Right.
And you say, what have I done wrong and where, you know?
Okay, I'm going to run out of time, but let me quickly...
Let me quickly...
The Ramban argues on this. Yeah. I at least want to get to this, because this is the most fun that I have a chance to say morale. There's a gorgeous morale, which maybe I'll take an extra 5 minutes anyone to say you can. Says the Ramban, he has a totally different approach in this entire thing. And the Ramban's main question is, I don't understand. If your way you're sending it up, Rashi, he says, you got the six sons of Leah on one side, you got the other four sons of the maidservants on the other. When Yosef was sold, how would that have broken down? You would have had six sons of Leah against him. You got the four sons of the maidservants who are on Yosef's side. Plus you have Yosef, that's five. But in reality, you have Reuven. Reuven was one of the sons of Leah, but he was really on Yosef's side. He told everybody not to do it. So you should have had a six on five, six brothers in favor of Yosef, only five against him. How can it be that everybody sold him? And it seems like everybody went along with this. It never should have happened if the way the Rashi is setting it up, the way that he makes the division of who was on whose side, doesn't make sense that he should have ever been sold and anybody would have convinced them all to do it. They should have been able to overpower them just in argument. No one was actually fighting, but simply in argument they should have been able to overpower them. Says the Ramban, what I think happened is as follows. Hunar. Do you know what it means that he was a nar with the sons of Bnei Bilo and Bnei Zilpa? That he was with them tamid. He was always with those sons. Lo yipore mehem ba'avor na'aruso. Because he was so much younger, he was under their charge. Ki lohem tziva avim shiyishmaruhu v'yisharsuhu. The younger sons, the sons of the maidservants, they were put in charge of Yosef. You watch after your brother. Your other big brothers are going to go out to the fields with the flocks and take care of their stuff. And you'll hang out with the maidservants. So that the maidservants were the babysitters of Yosef, raising him and taking care of him. And the sons of Leah were out there in the fields. And from them he brought evil reports. According to the Ramban, from whom did he bring evil reports? The sons of the maidservants, they were the ones he was always around. They were the ones he was with. That's the simple meaning of the verse. When you read the pasuk, it says, he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, and would bring evil reports about them to their father. Most logical reading is about the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. They were the ones who were taking care of him. They were the ones he was hanging out with. They were the ones he was bringing evil reports about. And that's why those four brothers hated him. The four brothers who were the sons of the maidservants disliked him because of the evil reports he was bringing. He did not bring evil reports about the main sons of Leah. They weren't doing anything wrong. And it was the exact opposite of your comment. The sons of Leah were fine, righteous individuals. It was the sons of the maidservants who were causing problems. And Yosef was reporting about them back to their father, Yaakov. The Achrikach Omer, but then the Torah says that Yaakov had a favorite son. Yaakov's favorite son was Yosef. Who did that really displease. The sons of Leah, they were the ones who couldn't tolerate. Now the other four sons of the maidservants, if they, all right, yeah, Leah and Rachel clearly had primary status, that he should love Yosef more than us, they would get. But the sons of Leah were, that was intolerable to them. Why should you favor Yosef? Our mother married you first. She gave you six sons. Nimtza sonui mikulam. Therefore the Ramban says, you see, all the brothers didn't like him, but for different reasons. V'nehag viros yikanubo lama yeyohev oso mehem. The older sons, the sons of Leah, didn't like him because they couldn't understand why Yaakov was showing such favoritism. Why do you love him more than us? And the sons of the maidservants didn't like him because he was tattling on them to their father Yaakov about what the things that they were doing. And therefore, when it came time to the sale, the Ramban says, everybody went along with it. Because it wasn't the way Rashi learns that Yosef reported about the six sons of Leah. They were the ones doing bad things, and he befriended the sons of the maidservants. The way the Ramban learns, he was reporting about the sons of the maidservants. And it was the sons of the six sons of Leah who didn't like him because he was favored. And in the end, they all hated him because of that. But for different reasons, so when it came time to sell him, they all got together and were willing to sell him. That is the Ramban explains that. I'm out of time. Anyone who wants to leave, you can leave. But if you anyone willing to stay for 5 minutes, let me just tell you a Maharal on this. Go right ahead. What were the things that Yosef reported? What were the three things that Rashi quoted that he reported? He reported Avram and Achai, that they were eating flesh from an animal that was ripped off before the animal was dead, that they were suspect in the area of illicit relationships, and that they were... What was their one? Calling them servants. Says the Maharal, how does the Torah describe them? As dibasom ro'ah. The word the Torah says, their evil incident that they were doing, he would report, the evil report, the word ro'ah is used. Says the Maharal, we find the word ro'ah, evil, used in the Torah and in Tanakh in these three areas, where the Torah specifically uses the word ro'ah. Number one, Yetzer ra shel ha'adam, a person's inclination, a person has a yetzer hara, ki yetzer ha'adam ra mine'urav. It's called evil. A person's desire is referred to specifically, yetzer lev ha'adam is ra mine'urav. We also find, not just my inclination, my yetzer, but my heart. There's a language the Torah will often describe as a person as having a lev ra. A person can have an evil heart. The numerous psukim, libam hara, lev hara, we find it calls various psukim. And thirdly, a person's eyes can be described as evil. V'ra einecha de'achicha, the Torah says, and your eyes will see evil in your brethren. Those three things. The Torah describes the heart as evil, as a person's yetzer's inclination is evil, and a person's eyes as being evil. Not everyone. Not that they are always evil. That has the potential. That word is specifically used to describe those three things. Now, a tzaddik, Yosef is described as a tzaddik, is tov, the opposite of ra, and therefore has the least tolerance for those specific three things. Three things having to do with the yetzer, person's inclination, his heart, or his eyes. If they are evil, Yosef, who was the embodiment of tzaddik, of tov, couldn't tolerate that. So when he saw his brothers not being the utmost particular about these issues, for him it was intolerable. They might not have been doing anything so wrong, but for somebody who was the embodiment of tov, seeing any aspect of ra was something which he felt was bad. How did these three things manifest themselves? Listen to this. Number one, what's the classic way that a yetzer hara, the inclination of evil, manifests itself? So he says that's in arayas, that's in illicit relationships. The type of the drive for illicit relationship is the most powerful drive in certainly in man. Yosef was talking about his brothers, and therefore the fact that he has ra, the yetzer ra would be in that aspect of what he reports back to them, that they were suspect on or in illicit relationships. Number two, you have the ayin ra, the eye. And what does Yosef do? He said his brothers are calling their brother evil. He's calling them eved, calling them servants. Why does a person call somebody else a servant? Yes. You want to push them down so that you should be up. That's an ayin ra. Person who's an evil eye, wants to push other people down, can't tolerate someone else enjoying the same successes that they have, because in order for me to feel good and be above, I need to suppress the people around me. That's the trait of having an ayin ra. And a lev ra is cruelty. What's the ultimate in cruelty? The Eber Menachai, where you rip off the leg of an animal because I need to be able to preserve the animal for me for a little bit later, so I'll rip off the leg while the animal's alive so that I could have fresh meat and then still have fresh meat a week from now. That's the ultimate expression of lev ra. So Yosef brought the evil reports in which he saw a manifestation of a lev ra, the cruelty of Eber Menachai. He saw an ayin ra, the evil eye, in that they were pushing down their brothers by calling them servants or slaves. And he saw ayin ra, a yetzer ra, in that they were involved in illicit relationships. Again, all these things, none of them were really there, but from his perspective of Tov, any break from that, he couldn't tolerate. And that's why he brought these specific three things, all aspects of ra. And the Ra'al says, that's what the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, there are three things which are motzien es ha'adam min ha'olam. Three things take a person out of this world. Ayin ra, yetzer hara, and lev ra. Those three things are mentioned in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Sonia sabria, someone who hates people, because a real sinna sabria, so hatred for a person which doesn't like them, because there's some cruelty involved there. Those are the three things, and he ties them all together. I just threw that in the last 5 minutes. I'm not sure if that came out clear or not. But that's why those specific things were mentioned.